Of what might happen to you as a result of making these revelations?
Oh, yes. I probably am a dead man already.
They think they're living in a police state.
Once upon a time, there were these people in Europe called pilgrims, and they were afraid of being persecuted. So they all got in a boat and sailed to the New World where they wouldn't have to be scared ever again.
I loves my gun,
and I don't mean no money like I work at Walmart and make no money.
So enjoy yourself, or I'll come looking for you. There and veg out in front of your TV and enjoy what these fine people are giving you, which is maximum entertainment. You understand what I'm saying about? And don't you ever, ever, ever forget what it's like without TV. Because before TV, people just sat and played with themselves all night.
I loves my gun. Loves my gun.
Recorded September 4th, 2012. This is your host, Iron Angel, back with another episode of Rangers A to Z. Welcome, and hopefully we can give you some tips for something useful. Now that summer's over, hopefully I'll be getting back and doing more shows. You know, as usual, when summer comes around, it gets busy. It's light out later, so you're out doing things. You get home, and you kind of drag yourself in and go, I really should record another show, and then you don't. And during the summer, there's a lot of things we run into that I thought, wow, those would be great shows, and I don't have that list with me, of course, you know, because I'm always so well-prepared when I record these. So at any rate, today we're going to do Tales of the Road, which is going to go back over some of the things we've covered in past episodes and hopefully add some new stuff. For those that don't know, I'm involved in a band. I play guitar in a weird tribal rock band. We've got a hand drummer, two rock guitarists, and a fire dancer. And you can find us on Facebook at Incantations Band. That's Incantations Band. Along with everything else, you can find other episodes of Rangers A to Z up on the Rangers website, which is r4nger5.com. I want to thank Rant Radio and Osprey Networks for hosting us. If you're not listening to us on either of those, you should probably check in there sometime occasionally. Other than that, let's get around to actually doing something that vaguely resembles a show, shall we? So being out and about amongst all the other folks traveling hither and yon and stopping here and there to help some folks out alongside the road, there's a whole bunch of things that popped into mind. I know we've covered some of this before, and it keeps being reinforced as we do the band stuff and everything else. Basically, if you're going to be going somewhere, if you've got to travel, it's a really good idea to compartmentalize as much as possible. Typically, I like to pack like with like. For example, put all your camping stuff together in one container as much as possible. Put all your kitchen stuff together in one container as much as possible. And that makes the unpack easier. It makes knowing where things are easier. It makes checking things off the list you should have a lot easier. As you put things in the containers, those get checked off the list. You got a big list of things like, you know, we need pans, spoons, a cook stove, so on and so forth. And then once you've got the containers packed up, you slap the list in on top of the container before you put the lid on it. And for containers here, I usually mean the big plastic tubs. Those are usually a lot easier to use than a lot of other things. Although sometimes we use big wooden chests, depending on what we're doing. If we're doing like Viking reenactment or something, we use big wooden chests as much as possible. So once you've got your containers and you've got your list put in there, you need a list of your containers, and of course you need to be able to get it all in your vehicle and not have it break the axles when you get it all packed in there and that kind of stuff. And any kind of loose, soft things like bedding, for example, could be stuffed in to fill any kind of voids and gaps. Generally speaking, square containers are a whole lot better to pack and ship and move and that kind of stuff, as opposed to, say, cylinder containers or spheres or any other weird shape you happen to come across. The big problem with those tubs is they've got gaps between them, but that can work to your advantage. Let's say you've got a minivan or a hatchback vehicle or something, and you can get two rows of containers in there easily with this gap down the center. That's a great place to put long, thin things like your folding chairs or fishing poles, you know, what have you that will lay in there, your tiki torch stands, that kind of stuff. If at all possible, keep things off the roof. I know a lot of people like to tie stuff to the roof. There's a couple reasons for that. One, the air resistance is going to reduce your gas mileage quite a bit. Two, and a better reason is there's always going to be bugs and crud and road grime and stuff stuck to whatever's up there. So if you've got something up there, at very least, either containerize it or wrap it in a tarp. That way if you get rained on, it doesn't get all wet and gooey and nasty. Because road grime plus water equals road mud, which is a special kind of thing you don't really want to play with, and it's kind of hard to get off, especially when you're trying to camp in the middle of nowhere. So now you get everything containerized, or in theory, as much as possible. Your soft stuff can get shoved in around between things. When we transport for the band, we're transporting drums. Djembe, Doombek, that kind of drum, which are a weird shape and don't really fit into anything very well. The heads are rather delicate. They'll take being beaten on just handily, but having something move as you're going down the road and rub against the drum head will wear a hole through it. And that continues with anything. I mean, if you've got, say, water bladders, you know, if you brought water from home and you've got it in something flexible, as big PVC flexible water bladders, for example, having a sharp piece of metal rub on it, or even a blunt piece of metal rub on it, will eventually wear a hole through it. So use your soft, flexible stuff to wrap your more delicate pieces. It's all pretty basic stuff, but I know a lot of people don't do it or don't think it through or do it in a hurry and that kind of stuff. And in the long run, it saves you time, it saves you money, and it saves you a lot of frustration. You're supposed to be doing this kind of stuff for fun, right? Right? In theory? So, you know, make it as easy on yourself as possible. One of the things that we've gotten really smart about is labeling stuff. This will go into band direction for a little bit, but you can use this for a lot of things. Go, say, to the dollar store, any place cheap. Get yourself one of those little packages of 6 or 7 different colors of electrical tape. If you get, say, I don't know, 5, 6 colors, you can do an awful lot of labeling. For bands, this is incredibly handy. Everybody gets assigned a color. Everybody's going to fight over certain colors. That's normal. Each person's cable, like their mic cable coming off from the mic on their amplifier, off their speaker, off their microphone or what have you, gets 2 bands of tape that's their color, say 2 bands of red, and then if for example, you've got a singer who's also got a guitar amp and you got to mic those, you put a 3rd band that's a different color to indicate which one's which, so 2 red and a blue and 2 red and a white, for example. That way, you've got an idea at the board end which thing goes where when you got to plug it all in. When you're doing that, it's not a bad idea to assign certain colors to be specific things. Like, for example, all vocal mics have 1 white band of tape on them, and then the person's dual banding to indicate, you know, it's the bass player, it's the guitarist, it's the drummer's mics. And the white mics are always the vocal mics, so you know which ones go which. It'll take a little longer when you first start doing this to set up because you have to lay the mic cables in the right spot and so on and so forth. But down the road, it's actually a lot faster. And it makes losing things a lot harder because you don't accidentally pack something in the wrong spot in the wrong box when you're coming out at the end of the night, you're tired and wiped out and that kind of stuff. One of the things that we did was the PA, the frontage cables, get special color band codes, and we use red and green for port and starboard like boats do. Yeah, I really can speak English. I swear, every time I do this, I can sit around all day long talking to people, and I don't stumble over my words anywhere near as much as I do when I got the microphone in front of me. I don't know why. It just works out that way. Anyway, we use red and green, so we know, say, for example, the right speaker is clipping. We can see the little light on the back going on and off. You can reach over on the board and pull down the right just a hair and reduce that problem. That way you know which one's which, and you don't have to try and guesstimate when you're in the middle of playing a song and trying to adjust and trying to do this and trying to do that and trying to remember what you're doing next and trying to keep from accidentally knocking something over and so on and so forth. So everything you can do to compartmentalize and label will help you. One more trick. On the mixing board, we always lay down a strip of masking tape. It's got the person's name written on it, and then in colored Sharpie, the color bands that their mics, cables, and such are supposed to be plugged into. That way, when you've got somebody helping you, all the cables get strung up to the board. All they got to do is plug in like to like. Two red and a white, two red and a blue, two blue and a green, you know, so on and so forth. However you decide to do your color system. This also works for a lot of other things. For example, when you're camping, sometimes you've got different length poles that have to go into the tent. If you color code them, it makes setting up in the middle of the night a lot easier because, you know, you're on your way camping, you're going to be there at 6 in the evening, it wasn't going to be a big deal, and you blew a tire, and then the guy you're driving with hit a deer, and you got to the campground at 3 a.m., and you're exhausted. So having everything color coded makes your life a lot easier. If you have to, either paint pens or colored Sharpies, that kind of stuff, say, for example, on the sleeves of the tent. Anywhere you've got interchangeable things, where you've got, say, two poles in a dome tent that are the same length and then three other ones that are different lengths, the two that are the same length are interchangeable. There's no reason you have to have individual codes for those. Those can both be, say, two red bands or two blue bands or whatever. A lot of manufacturers have started doing this, but they don't always give you all the color coding you need. We noticed that on our big band tent that the upper cover, the rain shade, is real easy to put on upside down. So we need to slap a couple of pieces of tape on the corners of that so you can tell it's right side up or upside down. And the electrical tape wears pretty well. It will peel off when it gets good and warm in the sun, that kind of stuff. But it's easy enough to replace. And if you've got a spare roll with you, it's no big deal to fix stuff. So label everything, color code everything, compartmentalize everything. That will make your time on the road a lot easier. It also means that when you get where you're going, you don't discover that something you needed is sitting alongside the road 16 miles back where it blew out of the back of your pickup truck. Now, if you're carrying stuff in the back of a back bed of a truck or something like that, it's a really good idea to cover it in a tarp. One, it reduces the wind blowing down into it and tearing stuff up, possibly opening up containers, possibly taking stuff out of the vehicle. Two, it increases your gas mileage. And three, it keeps the rain off should you actually get caught by rain or something else exciting. I was down somewhere around Detroit in traffic, and there was a vehicle about two lanes over from me. It was on a five or six lane, one direction road. And about two lanes over was a pickup truck, and they were obviously going camp, and they had chairs and the whole nine yards. You know, you could tell they were headed to the beach or someplace like that. And as they pulled out and passed a livestock trailer, one of the cows in the livestock trailer tipped its tail up and let fly. And I don't think they were aware until they got where they were going that they had picked up some extra fertilizer they probably didn't want. And had they tarped everything, it would have been a lot better off. It had been just take a hose to the tarp or just take the tarp off and leave it out and let it get rained on or whatever. Tarps are relatively cheap compared to a lot of the stuff you're covering. It also makes it a lot less of a possible issue for somebody wanting to steal it. So, you know, when you're parked in the Walmart parking lot, getting ice and that kind of stuff, you've got less chance of somebody wandering off with your camp stove or your chairs or what have you. Now, mind you, none of this stuff is really in the normal fold of Rangers A to Z, which is dealing with everyday emergencies. This is preventing everyday emergencies. This is preventing getting where you're going and discovering, oh, hey, you know, we've got a flat tire, we don't have a spare, we don't have a jack, so on and so forth. Those things should obviously be on your list of stuff you should be taking with. There's a few things that I suggested in the past, road flares and the like, that I want to go back and amend. If you're not used to dealing with high-temperature fire, road flares certainly are worth having, but may not always be the correct choice. Some of those big, geez, and I said I wasn't going to say ah all the time again, and I'm doing it. I swear, I keep going back to episode one every time. We're up to episode 17, and I'm going back to that horrible beginning. Get yourself some of the big light sticks, the very high intensity. You don't necessarily want the ones that last a really long time. You want the very high output ones. A reflective triangle that a lot of semis will carry is a real nice thing to have in your emergency kit, in your vehicle. Doesn't matter if you're going camping or just everyday driving. The reflective triangles, a few of them have, not all of them, but a few of them have a hole in the center of them, and you can hang a light stick inside of them. They're extremely reflective, so car headlights will show up nicely, but having a bright, really intense light stick hanging in the middle of them is even better. Typically, they come in packages of three, so you can set them out in a row kind of to push traffic out around you when you're on the side of the road, that kind of thing. The other thing is those light sticks are really handy when you can't find your regular flashlights, when you get to the site at 3 o'clock in the morning, that kind of stuff, and you need light immediately to get out your lantern, to get out your wind-up flashlight, so on and so forth. Throw a cluster of those in your glove box. They're readily available. They're real safe. They're real handy. They're real cheap. They work in the rain. They don't care if it's snowing. They don't care, really much of what's going on because it's a chemical reaction. So, very useful to have. let me see here. It's about 16 minutes in, and I have no idea what music I'm going to put in, so I don't know where I'm going to put it at. Hang on. Yeah, I still have no idea what I'm going to put in here. I'll find something. We'll have some tracks up here. I'll tell you what they are after them, because I'll have to throw them in before I do the next segment. At any rate, at this point, I think it's time we actually start telling some tales of the road. This is the entertainment portion of the show, where hopefully you learn a lesson from my stupidity and my mistakes. Some years ago, I was transporting a Volkswagen van. I got, 40, 50 miles downrange. I wasn't too far from a friend's place, so when I did break down, I had a place to get back to. But I was driving along, and I wasn't aware of it. I hadn't gone through and checked the lug nuts, and I should have. We had it in tow behind a pickup truck, and I could feel some vibration, and I changed the lane over, and it seemed to go away, so I figured it was probably just the concrete was rough. And I pulled back over in the lane, and I looked back at the rear view mirror and saw the tire go for a wander. Now, what's really interesting is, some years later, I think I may have discussed this in another show, Bishop and I, this spring, were headed down for an airsoft event and had a very nearly similar experience happen. Unfortunately, we did not have the tools with at the time to change things out. What I did with the Volkswagen was I jacked up that wheel. I drove out what was left of the lug nuts. They had been loose. As they started to vibrate and work, the work hardening in steel broke the lug nuts off one by one until the tire came off. I got lucky and found the tire. That made it easier. That same tire later blew in Texas, a couple thousand miles later. So maybe the tire was just cursed. I'm not sure. I probably should have done some voodoo juju over the tire or something to make it work better, but I don't know. Anyway, what I ended up doing was crawl up underneath of the other wheels. I was very fortunate in the way it was set up. I could get up in there, take a lug nut off, and drive the bolt backwards and reach up in and pull it out, and take one lug nut off each of the other wheels and put through into this, or one lug bolt, I should say, and put into this one that no longer had them, get the wheel back on. I got back to a buddy's house. It was late enough I couldn't get into an auto parts store, so the next day we went to an auto parts store, bought a new set of studs for it, and replaced all the studs in that broken wheel and put the other ones back where I got them from. If you ever lose your lug nuts, the same trick works. Done that too. Trying to change tire in the rain, had the tire I pulled off fall over, hit the hubcap, throw all the lug nuts down the ditch, and the ditch was full of, about 2 feet of water and a couple of cottonmouths. So I swiped the lug nut off all the other tires and drove on up to a truck stop, bought some new lug nuts, and put them all on and torqued them down. Off I went. I've had exhaust blow on the road where I caught something, piece of road debris or something like that, and had my exhaust let go. Everybody says, oh yeah, I use muffler tape. Oh no, muffler tape sucks. You wrap it on. In theory, the heat will cause it to fuse to the surface of the muffler. It's some kind of an asphalt-based compound. I've never had good luck with it. A better choice, and this is going to probably sound fairly strange, a better choice is if you've got an old cookie sheet laying around, throw it in the back of the car just in case, because it's handy for a lot of stuff. You're going to need tin snips to take that edge off. Wrap that around wrap wire around it, cross the wire, and twist the ends down with a pair of pliers or vice grips or multi-tool or what have you. And that will give you some reduction in the sound. It's fireproof or highly fire resistant. If your engine gets hot enough that it causes an aluminum or steel cookie sheet to melt or catch fire, you have a much, much more serious issue that I can help you with on a podcast radio show. Let's see. It's 20 minutes in. Hang on. Had to go check on a weird noise. The neighbor does a lot of shade tree mechanic stuff. He's good for a lot of information and stories and tricks and that kind of stuff. Good fellow. Heard a weird loud clunk, and I knew that he had a car up on a set of jack ramps, and I wanted to make sure it didn't drop on him. Turns out, no, he just dropped a big wrench. He was taking the flywheel off, and the wrench fell through, and that was what made the noise. If you're going to work on a vehicle up on jack ramps, be absolutely sure that they're level, that you've got the back wheels chocked really well so it can't go anywhere. If at all possible, have them on concrete. If you can't have them on concrete, put big boards under them. Back in my youth, a neighborhood fellow that I didn't know real well, but you know, he was the father of some friends of mine, had a jack stand kick out. It was in his garage, and the ramp itself just kind of wasn't level, and it kicked out from underneath the tire, and the car fell on him and killed him. So they are definitely... they're useful, they're handy, but they are dangerous. Always be real aware of what you're doing. And when you're working under a vehicle, always have somebody around you. Doesn't hurt to have something else stuck up underneath the vehicle to catch it if it should drop. Be it a jack, be it a toolbox, something with some real mass to it. Most modern toolboxes are not going to work. They're not going to cut it. I've got a huge old, really stupidly heavy one made out of quarter-inch plate that somebody built years ago. I think it probably was either the toolbox off of a service truck out in the field doing oil well service or something like that, or off a boat, I'm not sure which, but it was really heavily built, and it's got some pretty massive dents in it, so it's seen some adventures in its life. But, you know, always be safe with stuff. The biggest safety tool you have is the one that's behind your eyes right now, so use that in every case where there's any kind of machinery, any kind of possible danger. There's another way to get underneath of a vehicle that a lot of people don't think of, and I don't know why. I've used this on the road a number of times. That muffler fix thing came about doing this. Obviously, the muffler's hot when you stop, so it's going to take a while. Find yourself a curb that there isn't going to be traffic near. The concrete dividers in parking lots, if you get way out in the parking lot where there's no traffic, you can often do this. You drive the vehicle up onto the concrete curb. So it's actually sitting up on the curb. And that gives you quite a bit of clearance to crawl up underneath of there and see what's making some kind of weird noise when you're out on the road. You're not at home. You don't have access to a garage. You don't have access to a lift or anything like that. The only real issue with that is when you're out running around, you may not have something to chock your wheels with. If the vehicle does roll in that environment, more often than not, if you've lined it up right so the wheels are straight, it's not going anywhere because most lots are fairly level. If the vehicle does start to crawl or roll, hug right up tight to that concrete and try and get out from underneath it as fast as you can. If you start to see the vehicle rolling very slowly, you can grab it. Quite often you can stop it. I've had that happen once before. We were in a parking lot. I thought it went in park, and it didn't. For some reason, the shifter had gotten disconnected, and the vehicle got caught by the wind and started to roll. Heck of a wind that day. And I was driving a big Dodge van, so it was a billboard on wheels. And I was actually able to reach up and grab it and stop it from rolling. It didn't take hardly any tension whatsoever. You know, it wasn't a Superman feat of strength or anything like that. It was just basically reach up, grab it, and went, oh, right, I'm not supposed to go anywhere. Got out, swore a whole lot, slammed it back into park 3 or 4 more times, leaned on it to make sure that it was actually in park. I should have checked it first, and I didn't. Normally on something like that, when you've got it up in the air and you're going to be under it, you put your shoulder, your back into the frame of the door and you put your entire weight against it and try and get it to move. If it's a vehicle, it's a stick, leave it in gear. That'll help a lot. Drop it in reverse or low gear and that'll help a lot. Keep it from going anywhere. But all in all, you know, hopefully you'll never have to use any of this stuff, because all of this stuff just sucks. Usually the weather's really lousy. If you're really lucky, you put a tarp in there like I suggested. You can pull a tarp out if it's wet, throw that down. Hopefully you don't have as miserable of an experience as I've had many, many times. Let's see, other tales from the road. I'm going to remove names here. Not to protect the guilty or the innocent or anything like that. I'm just going to remove names just because. I made contact with a fairly well-known international act, a band, and I got a phone call from their bus. They were out on the road. I'm in Michigan. They're somewhere out in the northern end of Oklahoma or Kansas, someplace like that. And I picked up the phone, and the guy I know says, "Hey, you know anything about locks?" "Well, yeah." "Well, we got hit by a herd of deer, and we can't get out of the bus." "Well, back up. Back up. What? You hit a herd of deer?" "No, no, no. We were driving along, and a herd of deer ran into the side of the bus, and we can't get the door open. We think the lock's jammed." Okay. "I suspect the lock's not jammed. I suspect the metal is bent, and, you know, the door is just wedged shut. At this point, I think you can just kick the door open, you know, hit the latch, have somebody push the latch, and just kick the door open right there on the latch side. You're not going to do any more damage that's already been done." "Oh, right, good call, we'll do that." Of course, we already shoved the bass player out the window. He's walking to a truck stop we can see on the horizon. Now, this truck stop's about 8 miles away, and you know, they waited to call me until after he was quite a ways out. But yeah, it worked. You know, it was a simple enough solution. I've had to do a lot of weird repairs on things like that. I've had to fix things like, we had a RV pull up, guy gets out, full dress uniform. They're here on a Marine Color Guard for, I think it was Memorial Day. And they had accidentally broken the key off in the lock for the big bay underneath the vehicle that all the salute rifles are stored in. And they needed them a couple hours later. So he sought out the blacksmith shop, and we were able to get in there with a little wire and jimmy the key out. But, of course, that doesn't always work. Sometimes you have to actually drill the lock out. And drilling the lock is just drilling a hole through the center of the lock so it cuts all the tumblers, all the pins, and the lock just turns free. That's really bad for the lock. You're going to have to replace it. It will not lock again after that. In this case, we were able to get the key out. He had a spare key. That worked. You may or may not have quite such good luck. It isn't a bad idea at all to spray your locks spring and fall, and since it's fall, spray your locks with something like WD-40 or silicone. I prefer silicone. I don't know if there's really a whole lot of difference in the way they behave inside the lock. You're just trying to exclude moisture from inside of it. Your door locks, any padlocks you've got on things like trailers or outbuildings, that kind of stuff. Even your house locks. Because water in the lock will eventually cause corrosion. Even if the internal parts of the lock are made out of something like brass, you'll still get some corrosion in there. It'll still cause problems. Even a totally stainless steel lock, which very few are, some very exceptional locks are made out of solid stainless steel. Stainless is exactly that. It stains less than normal steel, but it can still rust. If you need proof of that, go to any flea market and look around, and you'll find either cheap little stainless Chinese-made knives or Pakistani-made knives or kitchen knives, that kind of stuff, that show marked signs of pitting, rust, that kind of stuff. And any metal will eventually corrode in some way, shape, or form. So something that excludes water from that surface will help a great deal in preventing oxidation. Because water is one of the big oxidizing... Air is the main oxidizing factor, but water aids the process quite nicely. I can explain why electrolytic acid and so on and so forth, a bunch of other reasons. So, chemical, what's going on. I don't know the chemical formulas for what's going on. I just know it happens. I kind of understand the process. I kind of understand all the things going on in there. But I can't give you a super 100% absolutely bulletproof, this is what's going on description of chemically what's happening there. But I do know for sure that WD-40 sure helps a lot. The stuff was designed as water displacer Formula 40 originally to spray on Atlas rockets. It really is rocket science. So, you know, can't hurt to have a couple cans of the stuff laying around. Use it sparingly. Keep it away from certain materials, plastics, rubber, so on and so forth, because it'll eat them. But, yeah, definitely very good idea to spray your locks. Like I say, spring and fall, change your smoke detector batteries while I'm thinking about it. Not a bad time to change your remote batteries. Not really an emergency thing, but boy, it's annoying when the stupid thing doesn't work, especially on something like your garage door, and it's raining cats and dogs. Oh, geez, I'm sure there was something else I was supposed to remind you to change, replace, so on and so forth, and I can't remember what it was now. Get your fire extinguishers checked, too, while you're at it. Make sure that the pressure's still good and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm going to cut away to some music here. I'm not sure what it's going to be yet. I got to find something. I'll slap it on. I'll talk to you after that's all said and done.
Stop.
course. I should have thought of that before. Andy Samford, three selections off Love and Magic. Those two were Love and Magic, the title track, Casting Spells, and I'm going to close with The Peak, which I've used in other shows, but I still really like the track. You can find everything Andy's ever done for free at electricminnowmusic.com. Go over there, check him out. He keeps cranking out great stuff. He does kind of a slow, grinding, bluesy, stoner rock kind of stuff. He does actually a lot of different varieties of music. He does some great covers. Absolutely great stuff. Thank you, Andy, for letting me use that. Good guy. Just a great dude. Lots of fun stuff. So at any rate, road stories. Andy actually did a road trip album. He packed up his guitars, took a road trip up into the mountains of Tennessee out of, I think he's out of Georgia, and recorded an album up in a little hotel up in the mountains and just kind of did the whole thing as a road trip album, which is pretty dang cool. I should have grabbed that and used that here. Didn't think about it. Ah, well. Okay, so back at what we're doing. May have to drop the background tracks down some. I don't know. That's a little loud. We'll see. All the background stuff is my stuff. You can find that at alonetone.com. It's not really that interesting. You've heard it here over and over and over and over again. I really need to record some new stuff. I've got some stuff I've done with a band that's derived from a few of these tracks that I'll put up here eventually. Once I get the okay from everybody else, we'll go from there. Let's see. Before I go any further, let me hit all the stuff I'm supposed to do at the end of the show, because otherwise I'll forget and I'll try and cram it in the last 17 seconds and it'll be all screwed up yet again. You can check us out on the Osprey Network. And I think we're there at 8 p.m. on Tuesday nights. We're on Rant Radio Talk at 9 p.m. on Saturday nights. You can find all of our stuff under Rangers A to Z at the main Rangers Mirror site and the main Rangers site, which is r4nger5.com. I want to thank Eli and Sumerian from Osprey and Rant, respectively, for having the show on. If you got a few extra bucks and maybe you learned something from this or one of the other shows, because this one hasn't been all that much fun, but hey, if you learned something, great. If you got a few extra bucks, both places have donate tabs. The money helps keep them up and running. Feel free to, you know, buy them a cup of coffee. So, at any rate, thanks, guys. Thanks for keeping us on the air. Thanks for keeping stuff like this out there, because, you know, you don't normally hear some of this kind of music in everyday radio. You don't normally hear this sort of stuff on talk radio. There's a lot of great shows on both channels, so definitely worth checking out. I've been invading other podcasts real heavily lately. I don't know how it's just worked out. It just has. Which, for me, has been really cool, and I want to thank everybody for letting me be on. Brushfires of the Mind. What else have I been on? I was on Vertigo Radio this last week. I want to thank Devin and Tom for having me on there. And so that's a whole lot of thanks in a very short period of time, which can't be terribly exciting for you guys out there, but neat stuff to listen to if you get a chance. Sent some stuff to the Uncle Dak show. Absolutely worth a listen. If you get a chance, Uncle Dak follows me on Osprey. And is also on at the same time Tuesday at 9 Eastern. All times are Eastern because I'm Eastern. He's on both Rant and Osprey at the same time. So great fun stuff. If you're easily offended and if you don't like swearing words, you won't like this show. But if you're like most of the people I hang out with, grab a cold one and sit back and relax. So getting back to being out on the road, really, I can't suggest this enough. Get a good night's sleep before you go. Eat well. A lot of people have a tendency to eat really poorly. I would suggest, for me at least, I don't know if this is going to work for you or not, but for me at least, it's a great idea to have snacks in the car. A mixture of proteins and carbs so that you're attentive, you're bright, you're not, you know, driving stupid, you're not all screwed up and in a food coma or anything like that. I have a mix that I like a lot, just cut up, stuck in a little mini cooler between the seats. Grapes, cheese, and summer sausage. Those three are a really nice blend. You keep cycling through which one you're grabbing. Obviously, you're not looking down when you're digging around. It's better if you got a passenger feeding you. Crackers are, you know, not a bad addition to that. Did I say crackers? I can't remember. If I didn't, they should be. Find one you like. cheese is definitely a good protein source, along with sausage. If you're vegan or vegetarian, those are going to be a problem. So find yourself alternatives that work in your diet. A lot of people will stop and eat a really heavy meal somewhere along the way. That's not necessarily the best thing to do, because your body gets in that kind of food coma, I want to have a nap, I want to go to sleep kind of thing. And when you're driving, you don't really want to fall asleep at the wheel and die driving. You especially don't want to die screaming like the rest of the people in the car will. So it doesn't hurt either to stop pretty frequently and take breaks. I'm one of those hardcore get in the vehicle, put your foot on the gas, let's go, let's get there already, I really like to drive. I'm one of those people that likes to drive 18 hours straight. I'm an absolute freak in that respect. I get into this sort of meditative zone. I throw CDs in and I can just go. But I'll stop about every 3 hours and get out and walk, because if you don't, you'll get stiffness, you'll get cramps. It could cause blood flow problems. If you already have some blood flow problems, it's not a good idea. If you know you're going to be taking a long trip for 2 to 3 weeks beforehand, take an aspirin a day and eat hot food, spicy hot food, because what happens is it thins your blood somewhat, which helps a lot, so you're not going to get as high a chance of getting, possible blood clots or cramps and so on and so forth. If you're not really into hot food, I totally understand. Some people can't do it. There was a period in my life that I just couldn't, for whatever reason, my body went, I'm done with this. And now I'm back to, ghost chilies. And if you don't know what ghost chilies are, don't eat one if it's offered. Even if you really like hot food, you're not really ready for this without some warning ahead of time. So, that said, definitely some road snacks are not a bad choice. And, of course, everybody loves Cheetos because they help you win, but they may not be the best choice when you're driving. They're starchy. They're going to go under the seat. They're going to turn into some weird thing you're going to find later. Have some napkins in the console, because the grease and stuff from whatever you're eating is going to be an issue. You don't want to get greasy fingerprints all over the buttons on the CD player and on the window because you pointed at something and poked the window like a moron like I do. Because, I do that. Any rate, napkins, paper towels, something like that. If the windows fog up, don't touch the window with your hand. Because the oils from your hand, even if you're not eating something, the oils from your hand will smear on the inside of the glass, and then when it gets condensation again, you'll have streaks. Quite often at night, you'll have streaks, and you'll have stars in the light from oncoming vehicles, from overhead lights, so on and so forth, stoplights and whatnot, in those oil streaks. That's why having napkins in the console is not a bad thing. Grab one, fold it over, wipe the window off to clear off the dust and stuff like that. Before you leave, it's really not a bad idea to clean your windows inside and out. The Rain-X stuff, which I think has silicone in it, but I'm not sure, really does work. I don't normally want to name brands, but there's a bunch of different versions of this, generic versions and stuff, so seek them out. The anti-fog coatings and stuff like that, and the sheeting coatings really do work. I Rain-X the inside of my windshields, too, and it worked pretty good. Until, one of my idiot friends smashed a bug on the windshield right in front of where I was trying to look. But it did clean off a lot easier, I will say that. So, yeah, the stuff works. Trying to light my pipe and talk and watch the meters and push buttons and all that crap all at once didn't work quite as well as planned. Yeah, I should quit smoking, I know. You should, too. If you don't already, great. Rock on. Do that. Get out there, get some exercise. Go outside, We're always inside sitting in front of computers. All of our time goes into computers. Get outside. It's been a real hot, dry summer, but it's been absolutely beautiful out. I don't think I've ever seen a summer that wasn't just absolutely gorgeous in some way or another. So, absolutely worth it to go outside and see the world. Get out. If you can afford the gas, get out and get on the road and go for a road trip. Go someplace you've never been before. Take a camera, take pictures, pick up your trash, take that back home, obviously, and all that kind of stuff. Oh, and if you're traveling with kids, make it a fun experience. I remember as a kid, we did a lot of family vacations. Some of them were pretty dang high stress. That sucked, We tried, everybody, my parents tried, but, they didn't pre-plan on stuff, and kids get bored easily. Nowadays, cars got DVD players and all that kind of stuff. You're not seeing anything. You're watching a movie. You could be doing that at home. All the old classic games of trying to spot different things, that kind of stuff, really good idea, really good way to one, make them pay attention to what's outside in the world around them. Sure, you don't see that much from freeways, but you still see some. If you can, plan your trip through back roads. Plan your, well, not necessarily back roads, but maybe, you know, the subsidiary highways, the two-lane highways and stuff. Get out there, see the world, see some things you haven't seen before. If you're going someplace you've been before, take a different route. If nothing else, you might see something you never expected to see. We were out driving around in town with the band. We were going over to pick up some equipment, and we ran into, of all things, a guy with a yellow submarine on a trailer. So, of course, we had to stop and get our picture taken because, you know, not every day you see a yellow submarine, and found out there was actually a submarine convention in town. There's a, in Muskegon, Michigan, there's the Silver Sides, an old World War II sub, and there had been a collection of about seven or eight small home-built submarines out in the bay around where the Silver Sides is at, and there was this little sub convention, so we had to go down and check that out, you know. So that was pretty cool. You just never know what you're going to see out on the road. I've seen a lot of things that were really kind of puzzling, things I really wish I had photos of just to prove that I actually saw them. We came across a, when I was a kid, we were traveling down in Indiana, came across on the interstate a semi-truck carrying what looked like a giant flying saucer. And so we got on the CB with him, you know, my dad got on the CB with him, and said, so, you know, are you taking that to Area 51 or what? He kind of laughed and said, no, it's actually a giant concrete sewer cover where the big end of the sewer drain was, and they had this, I don't know, 12, 15 foot in diameter. It was sitting diagonally. It was huge. Sewer cover that was going someplace in Illinois. So, you know, that was one of those things I never expected to see. Another thing is, keep a journal. You know, keep a record of what you see out on the road. Do it as a blog if you want to. You can update it from your smartphone or your laptop or whatever. Or you can just write it all down, then type it in when you get home, that kind of stuff. And share with other people. Because really, life is a shared experience. The more that you can share, the more neat things like that you can spread, the better. You know, everybody's gotten into this habit of just, you know, click and share on Facebook and not adding any new material. Be the person that everyone wants to read your post because you're the one writing new material. Be the person on the blogs that they want to read. And you know what? Get yourself a radio show. It ain't that hard. If I can do it, you can do it. Hopefully you won't say as much as I do. Hopefully you'll actually remember to grab your notes before you do your show, which I never do. And it doesn't take much. This is being recorded with a really basic computer, a Logitech headset, and Reaper.fm. Great stuff. I use it. I endorse it. I am not getting paid by them or nothing, but I like it a lot. It's kind of like Audacity, only better. There's a lot to be said for sharing your experiences. I wouldn't mind hearing back from people, actually. If you've got some experiences you'd like to share with me, heck, if you'd like to be a guest on the show. If you're on Facebook, jump on there. Find us at facebook.com/Rangers, A to Z, R4NGER5, A2Z. Heck, if nothing else, you know, click like. You'll get to see whatever weird post. Sometimes I'll go through and write up something, throw it up there that doesn't necessarily fit into one of the shows. Weird little tips that I've picked up. Something stupid I did. A lot of the tips I have are from something stupid I did. If you can't learn from your own stupid mistakes, you know, you're just going to have a rough life. The reason I know so much weird eclectic stuff is because I make a lot of stupid mistakes, let's face it. Any rate, we're starting to wind down. Looks like we got, not more than 5-10 minutes left here. Let's see, other tales from the road. We talked about changing tires. Obviously, if you can, you know, anytime you're in a breakdown situation, get as far off the road as you possibly can. Be safe out there. If you see somebody else broke down and they're sitting in a situation where they're kind of, say, out in the road a little bit on a highway or something like that, if you can, pull in behind them, about 4 or 5 car lengths back, pull in diagonally with the front end of your car pointing off the road and your four ways on. That shields their vehicle. If by some horrible chance you do get hit, it'll drive your vehicle down into the ditch instead of out into traffic. You'll notice a lot of times police officers will stop this way. They'll pull their vehicle further out to get people to go around them, and the vehicle will be set diagonally, so if it does get hit and pushed, it gets pushed away from the people they're trying to protect. Heck, even if you just sit there, you know, you just stop and, you know, wave at them or whatever. Even if you can't really, if you don't know anything, if you can't give them a hand, you know, sit there, grab your smartphone, check Facebook, or, you know, listen to the radio, listen to a CD or whatever, you know. And it's, you know, if you've been traveling, it's not a bad time to get out and stretch. Even if you can't really be of much help to these folks, get out, you know, away from your vehicle, obviously not in front of it where it's, you know, it's going to get pushed if it does get hit. If it's dark out, maybe set out your reflectors, your reflective triangles, that kind of stuff. Try and give some folks some cover. Help each other out there. We've gotten into a state, particularly with the election cycle here in the U.S., where everybody is after each other. That's really not what it's all about. The whole thing in life is to help each other out. Learn from each other, help each other out. Even if you and I don't agree on things, there's absolutely no reason we can't be friends. There's absolutely no reason that we can't help each other. There's no reason I can't learn from you and you can't learn from me. Hopefully you're making far less stupid mistakes than I am and doing far less horrible things to your body than I am. But your experience is useful and valuable too, so share it with people. Get out there, you know, let people know, hey, I know how to do this. Can I help you out? You know, I may not be able to physically help you do it, but this is my experience in doing this, if it's something they haven't done before. This is how kids learn. This is how, you know, as a teenager, I learned how to do a lot of stuff, as the old guys showed me what they were doing. And in many cases, you know, they were too busted up from their lives to be able to actually physically help me, but they could stand there and give advice and tell me, you know, this is going to go badly if you do this. And, you know, I was dumb. I had to do it that way anyway just to find out for myself that, yep, they were right. You know, so sometimes when an old guy tells you, don't do this because it's going to end badly, you might want to think that through and go, huh, I'll be darned. He's right. You know? Any rate, I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you learned something. I hope there's something there you can use and share. As usual, feel free to record these and share them. You can get them off the Ranger's Mirror at rangers.com. If there's anything there that you want to share, please feel free. This is a free podcast. Distribute it as you see fit. If you want to remix it and do that kind of stuff, have fun. Cool. I'd love to hear it. Love to hear it. I'm going to close out here with another track from Andy Samford from Electric Minnow Music with The Peak. And, yeah, I got to that just a little too soon. I didn't look at my marker. I still got a few seconds to run my mouth. So have a great day. Take care of each other out there, all right? Go, Andy.